From the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA, it's Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin. If you have a medical question, call us at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255. Email sundayhousecall at cfra.com. Now here's Dr. Barry Dworkin.
Good afternoon and welcome to edition number 392 for this April the 8th, 2012. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin, and you're listening to Sunday House Call. Taking your calls at 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, and our long-distance number, 1-800-580-2372. Looking forward to speaking with you this Sunday. And as always, if you call in earlier, we'll have a lot more time to review your questions and try and provide as thorough an answer as possible. And I wanted to start off, you've heard some of this before, but this is more, I would say it's more organized now in terms of what is being reported. And this is an article out of WebMD written by Denise Mann. It was dated, I believe, today. And actually, April the 5th, my apologies. And it's a series of professional health groups, actually nine of them in total. And these include the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology, the American Academy of Family Physicians, the American College of Physicians, the College of Radiology, Gastroenterological Association, American Society of Clinical Oncology, the Society of Nephrology, and American Society of Nuclear Cardiology, including as well the American Board of Internal Medicine. So there's a whole host of various organizations that are trying to provide to you whether tests are necessary, which ones are necessary, which ones really shouldn't be done routinely. Because again, when we do tests, usually you are doing it on the basis of either sound evidence that the test will screen accurately for a condition in someone who is already healthy or considered to be healthy. And so you don't want this test to end up telling you you have something when you don't, because ultimately what happens from that is that a whole slew of other tests are done, some invasive, some not. But nevertheless, more tests are done and turns you into a patient instead of leaving you alone. And there are dangers to your overall well-being, both from a physical and an emotional standpoint, when a potential test tells you you may have something, especially if it's something serious, when you do not. So they've gone through this, and there are 45 of them, believe it or not. And I will post this on my website at drbarrydworkin.com for this particular show's podcast. And the procedures are as follows. And I'm just going to read them out because they're very common ailments that people have. So for example, doing x-rays on your back for back pain during the first 6 weeks is usually not indicated. And again, these are after doing a physical exam where you don't find anything overly serious. So it's not a matter of someone coming in with back pain that may have a ruptured disc or something along those lines where your physical exam will tell you that there's something wrong and you do the test. This is more back pain. You do an exam and it's muscular pain from your experience. Doing an x-ray is not going to help you. Antibiotics for mild or moderate sinus infections unless the symptoms last for 7 days or symptoms worsen after getting better. Using what's called a DEXA scan. DEXA scans are bone density scans. If you're a woman younger than 65 or a man under 70 with no risk factors, there's no need to do this particular scan. Pap tests, if you're a woman under the age of 21, there's no need to do that. Or if you've had a hysterectomy for a non-cancer reason, again, no reason to do a pap test. The American College of Physicians says you probably don't need electrocardiograms if you don't have symptoms or at low risk of heart disease. A brain imaging, such as CT or MRI scans, if you fainted and have a normal neurological exam. And a lot of times people go into the emergency room, they have fainting, and they're given a scan. Preoperative chest x-rays if you don't need them. The cancer physicians, the American Cancer Society, will say that treatments aimed at eliminating solid tumors if you are weak and frail did not benefit from previous treatments, and there's no sign more treatment will help. So you don't need more treatments if it hasn't been working for any and getting rid of a solid tumor. PET scans, CT scans, or bone scans are not needed if you have early-stage prostate or breast cancer with low risk of spreading. They've also, the American Society of Cardiologists says you don't need to get an exercise stress test if you don't have symptoms or a high risk of heart disease. And exercise stress tests or advanced imaging for routine follow-up exams if you don't have any symptoms. Your gastroenterologist, I mean, the list goes on, ladies and gentlemen. The gastroenterologists say you probably don't need any more than the lowest effective dose of antacids for long-term treatment of reflux. You don't need to do a colonoscopy for, if you have a normal colonoscopy, you don't have to do another one for another 10 years. There's no need doing one earlier than that. And if you were found to have polyps on your previous colonoscopy, you usually don't have to have more than one done every 5 years. So those are some of the recommendations that they have. Further along the line, the radiologists, so the people that do the x-rays and the CT scans and the MRIs and all the other stuff, again, they say you don't need imaging studies if you have uncomplicated headaches. So you don't have to do CT scans if your headache is diagnosed as a tension headache or a migraine. You don't need to do CT scans in children with suspected appendicitis. You can do an ultrasound. You do an ultrasound first before you consider doing a CT scan. They also say that you don't need follow-up imaging studies for ovarian cysts that aren't causing a problem. And urologists say that unproven tests, and you'll hear this on the radio, advertisements, also in newspapers and all kinds of other places, but there are unproven tests such as what's called IgG or immune globulin G tests or a battery of IgE or immune globulin E tests to find out what you're allergic to. Sinus CT scans or antibiotics for uncomplicated sinus infections are not necessary. And routine extensive diagnostic testing if you have chronic hives. So again, all these tests, not necessary according to these groups. They've also, it pretty much covers pretty much most of it. And again, the importance of this is always, always ask why a test is being done. And at the same token, some people will come to their physicians wanting specific tests that their physician wouldn't usually have ordered. And so you have to be able to accept also explanations and given a good explanation why this test is not necessary, right? A test in and of itself, when you are otherwise healthy, doing that test does not necessarily mean it will make things better. You really have to be sure that the result you get is something that you're going to be able to use and use properly, as opposed to having it produce a result that actually will lead to further harm. So I will be posting this on my website for you to review. It's a nice list to carry with you and review in case, you know, it comes up where you may need these tests. You'd like to ask why it's being done. What's the outcome going to be? What they're going to do with the result as a means of not only protecting yourself, but also avoiding, if such is the case, avoiding an unnecessary test. 521 Talk, 521-8255, *580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is our long distance number. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday House Call, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, Sunday House Call, News Talk Radio 580, CFRA. CFRA Sunday House Call, your weekly checkup with Dr. Barry Dworkin. Call us at 521-TALK, 521-8255, or email the doctor, sundayhousecall@cfra.com.
Talk 521-8255 *580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is our long distance number. We have lots of lines available, and what usually happens, ladies and gentlemen, is that the calls fill up at around 20 minutes to 5 and we end up running out of time. So calling in now, you will get your question answered, and we will go to the phone lines and welcome Norm from Nepean. Good afternoon.
Yes, doctor. How are you?
I'm doing just great. How about you?
Oh, fine, I guess. Someone called me and told me that they're having some type of operation for diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
They said that somehow they've stitched the stomach in some people, and they seem to have gotten much better with their diabetes, with their sugar control,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
This,
do you know anything about it?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we had one. This was about, I'd say this about now 2 or 3 years ago. We had a surgeon from the University of Otago in New Zealand, who published some studies that on exactly that. When they did, it's called bariatric surgery. So this is for people who have a diagnosis of morbid obesity, and they have tried to lose weight through conventional means and just have not been successful. And they had diabetes. And what was interesting is that when they did the surgery and they bypassed an area of the small intestine, it's called the duodenum or duodenum.
Yeah.
This is an area that follows, it's a C-shaped part of the intestine. That's just where the stomach empties into that area.
Right.
And when they bypassed that area, they found that within about 6 days, many of their patients didn't have diabetes anymore. And this was even before they lost the weight. And so this led to a question saying, okay, what is going on in that area of the intestine that is responsible for, in this case, glucose intolerance? That is, the body's has difficulty processing sugar levels. You know, when sugar levels go up, it can't get the sugar into the cells, which is what the problem is. And they called this factor X because they weren't sure what was going on. Well, we now know that there are, and there are likely more hormones associated with this. One of them is called ghrelin. There's what's called incretins, which is another type of hormone that seem to be associated with this, with diabetes or at least glucose intolerance. And it's secreted when food flows through. So they repeated this procedure and actually did this study on an animal model. In this case, they used mice and rats, and where they did the procedure, and they were diabetic mice and rats. And when they did the procedure, diabetes disappeared. When they reconnected the intestine and reversed the procedure, the diabetes came back. So very much so, there is a growing body of evidence, at least in the short to medium term, that when you do this surgery in people who have diabetes, who are morbidly obese, that you will help reverse that process.
Go ahead. Well, when you say morbidly obese, you're talking about maybe 350 pounds.
Usually we're talking about people who have body mass indexes of 35 or greater, and certainly over those of 40. A body mass index is not really the greatest measurement to use in people who are of lesser weight, you know, when they're in 25 to 30 or so. But when you get to a point where it's 35 to 40, it really does indicate morbid obesity. But it is a valuable tool in terms of doing this surgery in order to reverse many of the ailments that they suffer from.
Yeah. Would they be doing these things in Canada?
Yeah, the bariatric surgery is available in Ottawa, Toronto. There's just a long waiting list for it.
Yeah.
But it is done to help people lose weight. Primarily, it's for people who are suffering from the ravages of obesity and have diabetes, osteoporosis. They might be depressed.
Oh, yeah.
They have, you know, a whole host of other issues, high blood pressure, and the risk of having those diseases on an ongoing basis means that you are, certainly at much more risk over your lifetime of dying from that condition. So, they're being offered a procedure. People are being offered a procedure that can save their lives, improve their quality of life, and really is no different. Because there's a bias, Norm, with regards to obesity. People will say, why are we doing surgery for people who are obese? They should just go on a diet and lose weight and get with the program. Well, it's much more complicated than that. And
you talk like my wife.
It's much more complicated than that. And a good analogy would be, suppose we were to reframe this, and we know that breast cancer, 30% of breast cancers are associated with obesity. And would you tell a woman that if she was morbidly obese that, hey, you know, if we do the surgery, not only are we going to potentially reduce your risk of diabetes and heart disease, but we might reduce your risk of breast cancer by 30%. Would you blame her for wanting to get the surgery?
No.
Of course not. But and that's the point. It's a disease process. Whether we like it or not, I would prefer to make this surgery widely available to people because the benefits have been well documented in terms of, again, not only the reversal of the diabetes, but reduction of damage to joints, reduction of heart disease, reduction of stroke risk, improved quality of life, more mobility. They start to move around more. It completely changes a person's life.
That's right. It could make a big difference.
Absolutely.
You know, when you lose 40 pounds, 50 pounds
And on top of that, because I've had several patients who, actually more than a few patients that have had this procedure, and no more diabetes, no more pills, $1,000 a month for pills goes out the window. So cost to the healthcare system, they've calculated that the cost of the surgery is about $18,000. That's usually what it costs here in Ontario to do. Well, you recoup that money in about 2.5 to 3 years. And then everything after that is money you've saved. Because now the person does not have to take any of those medications. Not only that, they can likely resume work if they happen to have been disabled. Their quality of life improves. They become more productive members of society. The benefits keep on going. And also, another thing that people don't realize is that a lot of people who have this condition of morbid obesity also have sleep apnea. And sleep apnea in itself is at risk of high blood pressure and depression and a whole bunch of other conditions.
So you would recommend I look into it with my doctor.
If there is a clear indication for this surgery on the basis of the criteria for doing the surgery, I'd absolutely look into it, especially if you've done other things and it just has not worked.
Well, I haven't. I'm on insulin, which I take about, I must take 100 units a day and 15 pills.
Yeah.
So I would be more than happy to get rid of all that.
Now, that being said, if you're on insulin, you may find that the diabetes doesn't completely go away, but a lot of other factors and a lot of other risk factors that contribute along with the diabetes to heart disease and stroke will subside.
Right.
So there's no magic solution, but certainly there is a benefit to the procedure, especially for people who fall within those people that have already gone through it, because you have to go by what the evidence shows for people who have had the surgery, what type of people they were in terms of the diseases that they had and what the outcomes have been.
I could possibly look that up in the computer.
Oh, I'm sure. It's a bariatric surgery. There's lots of information about that.
Yeah. Thank you, Doctor.
You're very welcome, Norm.
Most helpful.
Very welcome. All the best.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now. And what we're going to do is we're going to take a small break and then come back and speak to Joy in Ottawa, and also Leonard in Ottawa. He wants to talk about a scar on the shoulder and immunizations. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You are listening to Sunday House Call on 580 CFRA, and we will be back in about 3 minutes or so with your calls and questions at 521-TALK, 521-8255, *580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is our long distance number. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
580 CFRA Sunday House Call, your weekly checkup with Dr. Barry Dworkin.
I finally made it through med school.
580 CFRA Sunday House Call, your weekly checkup with Dr. Barry Dworkin. Call us at 521-TALK, 521-8255, or email the doctor, sundayhousecall@cfra.com.
*521-TALK, 521-8255, *580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is our long distance number. And we're going to go to line 2 and Joy in Ottawa. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm going to tell you my problem before I get cut off because I'm on one of those
Phones
that battery can die on it.
Sure.
Any minute. So So my question is, my daughter is 15, and I'm wondering what is normal, what is not. She says she's been angry, and she says she has bipolar. She said, and I said, well, bipolar is like, isn't that when you want to kill yourself? She says, yeah, I felt like that sometimes. So I suggested to her that we talk to her doctor about it and all that. Mm-hmm. She says, no, she doesn't want to. So my question is, what is normal, what is not, what should I do?
Well, someone who is especially a 15-year-old that's telling you that they're thinking of harming themselves is not, that's not normal. It's always considered to be not a normal thing. And so the question then becomes, what are the other factors in her life that are contributing to her feeling that way? And also, has she had any plan? If she's thinking of something like that, you have to ask, okay, what kind of plan do you have to hurt yourself? And have you thought about acting on that plan? But somebody that bipolar disorder is not an indicator of suicidality. Bipolar disorder is a diagnosis of a specific psychiatric diagnosis where someone will go through periods of feeling extremely depressed to periods of feeling very high, literally feeling the greatest they've ever felt, and then coming crashing down to earth again. And there are different types of bipolar disorder. Uh-huh. But, you know, someone who's 15, if they're telling you that they are thinking about hurting themselves, whether they want to go see the physician or not, they need to face up to the consequences of their statements. They can't just be left and saying, well, okay, fine, we're not going to go anywhere. They're telling you this for a reason, right? There's the, otherwise, why would they be saying something? So it's still a matter of saying, you know, if you're feeling that way, there are groups and there are resources available for you to find out exactly what it is you have, why you even think you have bipolar disorder, who told you that, and seeking redress for it. But this is not someone I would just say leave alone and then follow up 3 months later. This is where I would say, okay, if you're thinking that you're suicidal and that you want to hurt yourself, well, then we're off to the emergency room, because suicidal thoughts or a person who's contemplating suicide is considered to be an emergency. And she will be assessed by the psychiatrist. In this case, it would be a CHEO. She would be assessed to determine whether she is at risk and what could be going on. So it's a situation where she's going to be likely made to do things she doesn't want to do. But she's already revealed to you that she has this issue. And we can't sit on that, considering, you know, all the higher profile situations we've seen in the news over the past year with regards to suicide in teens. It's not something that we take lightly.
Well, she said she had it. She was like, I tried to get more out of her, mm-hmm. what's going on. And she said that she had it maybe 4 or 5 times where she's been very angry.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, what did you do? You know, how did you get out of it? And she said she talked to somebody about it. I said, well, that's good that you talked. And so she doesn't have it all the time. It's just that I was shocked when she said that. And I said,
right.
Well, you don't even know what's bipolar. Like, why do you say that? And she seems normal. Like, she's enjoying school and mm-hmm. she's playing hockey and she's going socializing and all that. So that's why I'm very shocked. Like, I don't get what's going on.
Right. And when there's such an incongruous statement, because, again, you can have someone that seems to be perfectly fine and no one knows anything is wrong. But for her, if she gets angry and she starts to feel that way, something is not right in
yeah.
terms of how she's responding. It could simply mean she needs the tools necessary to deal with issues that make her angry, to give her resources from her sense of self as well, to be able to know how to handle situations that way,
okay.
so she doesn't get to that state. And so it certainly can be framed to her saying, you know, there are ways to develop tools for you to be able to handle that situation so you don't suffer like that. Because if she's telling you stuff like this, it's obviously bothering her. So you have to use that tack and say, look, if you want to be treated like an adult and you want to be more independent, then by getting the help that you need is actually a means of becoming more independent and more self-reliant. And that having someone to talk to, and friends can't be your therapist, right? Friends are not, they're not equipped enough to be, they're there for support, but they can't do what is necessary to help somebody. I mean, she doesn't have to see a psychiatrist. She could see a psychologist. There's a lot of great female psychologists out there. She's more comfortable that way. But it's just in order to, sometimes they just need a bit of help on how to cope with situations that tend to trigger this behavior. But it's important to have a diagnosis or at least understand the mechanism that leads her to react that way. And so it's not something that I would, again, just leave alone. The answer for you would be, no, this is not normal for her to be saying something like that.
Mm. Okay. And so I'll tell her, like, I start with my family doctor then? And just...
You can. She has to, it'd be important for her to see somebody she is comfortable with. So that would be a good thing. There are some good psychologists out there as well that you do not need a family doctor to refer you to. Psychologists are not covered under OHIP, but they're quite good. And I can give you somebody's name off the air when we go to the break, who I find is she's a female psychologist, and she's absolutely terrific.
Okay.
And that might be somewhere to start, even just calling her, and she'd be probably more than happy to discuss some of this with you over the phone before even seeing her.
And one more question.
Sure.
I've had depression and all that, and I'm on antidepressants. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if it's something hereditary that
It certainly can be, absolutely. Right. And this would be around the time that you would see stuff like this happen.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely, depression and depressive illness can be an inherited condition.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, Joyce, you want to hang on? I'll just put you on hold, and we go to the break. I'll have our producer give you that person's name.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. And we're going to go to line four, and Leonard in Ottawa. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Just something, those scars on people's shoulders, you know. I don't know if it's a left or right shoulder, but do those scars, is there something that they're doing today with the needles and everything else?
Oh, I think you're talking about that scar that we got as kids because there was this four-prong needle thing that they used to stick in the arm on the shoulder.
Right, that's
yeah,
right.
I had that stuff done too. But that's a long time ago, Leonard. That's back in the 60s.
I know.
They don't do that anymore. That was a specific test. And you know what? I don't even remember what that was, but it was a series of vaccinations that way. I'm not sure if it was a TB thing or something else, but it did cause a small scar in that area. But the vaccinations that are given today don't leave scars in the shoulders because they're what we call intramuscular injections for the most part. So the needle goes into the muscle itself. It's a tiny needle, and it doesn't leave very much of anything on the surface of the skin. But, boy, that brings back memories. Holy cow.
Take care now.
You too, Leonard.
Right.
Bye-bye now. 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372. Is the number to call, and we're going to go to line three. And Sean in Ottawa, good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon.
How are you?
Good, thank you. I was interested to hear that gentleman talking about weight loss procedures. And I have just had been referred, it was my request, to be referred to the weight loss clinic at the Ottawa Hospital.
Right.
And I'm just wondering what your opinion is of the program that they have where you're on a liquid diet for a certain period of time and then you go on to, you know, back onto regular food and you're coached and so on and followed by a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
What is your opinion of that program?
Well, I've had several patients go through that and they have lost weight. The issue always becomes one of how sustainable it is.
Right.
So this program is... designed so that you do go back to regular food.
Right.
The issue, though, is always when there is a dramatic change in someone's food consumption or their overall eating pattern.
Right.
It can be very difficult for that person to literally switch back to a diet of regular food and keep to that diet unless the normal triggers and all the environmental influences that created the condition in the first place are dealt with.
Okay.
So it can be successful, but it is not, as with anything, diets themselves, because of the nature of what a diet means, a diet usually means that you're changing, in some cases dramatically, how you consume food and also how you interact with your environment. Because, you know, walking by a store, walking by a Tim's or walking by all the things that normally would trigger your reasons for eating have to be also understood and dealt with.
Okay.
So it will work.
Is the reason for the liquid diet in the beginning of it, is that to kind of give you a kickstart? Or
I think it's depending on how much weight someone has to lose. It's mainly calorie restriction. So it's trying to give you what your body needs in terms of nutrients per se, but it's calorie restricted so that you lose the weight. But it again, it requires a lot of willpower. You know, it really does require a lot of discipline to follow something like that.
Well, but I do have some friends that have a couple, actually, a married couple who've been on it together at the same time, and it's dramatic how much they've lost.
Oh, yeah, they will.
And they're back on the, you know, they're back on regular food now, and they seem to be doing okay. And,
yep, I think it's a matter of looking at things short, medium, and long term.
Right.
When people are doing something together, there's reinforcement because they're both encouraging each other. When,
of course,
when doing things on your own, it sometimes can be a little bit, you know, you want to have some more support, which they do offer at the hospital. So
right, because I'm a single person. I live alone.
Yeah.
And but I'll tell you why I thought it was such a good idea, because I'm 60 years old. I'm 5'4". I weigh 250 pounds.
Right.
So you can see I probably have a high body mass index.
Right.
I've already had a double bypass 7 years ago. I have type 2 diabetes. And now my mobility is quite compromised. I'm still able to get around, but I just find it really hard. Like, my energy level is zilch. I have sleep apnea, although it's treated. You know, I do have a machine and so on. But I just find that my mobility is getting to the point where I'm just, you know, I can hardly crawl sometimes.
And yeah, I think it's worthwhile, Sean, to try it.
Yeah.
You know, again, given your situation, the weight loss, you are going to lose weight. I mean, that's what's going to happen. It's maintaining that weight loss afterwards.
Okay.
And that's where the focus should be, and where your discussion should be with them, to say, look, we need to really make sure that I don't fall back into my old patterns, and help me try to change. Let's look at my entire environment. What do I have to change around me? What do I have to avoid?
Right.
How can I, you know, when I return to normal eating patterns, how can I make sure that I don't fall into the same trap again?
Right. Okay. Good.
And I wish you all the best of luck, Sean. I think that's great that you're trying something like that.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Bye-bye
now. And we're going to take a small break. And when we come back, we have Margaret in Ottawa who would like to talk about asthma. 521-TALK, 521-8255, *580 on Bell Mobility. 1-800-580-2372 is a long-distance number. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday House Call. Back in just a few minutes.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, Sunday House Call, News Talk Radio 580, CFRA. 580 CFRA's Sunday House Call, your weekly checkup with Dr. Barry Dworkin. Call us at 521-TALK, 521-8255, or email the doctor, sundayhousecall@cfra.com.
And right back to the phone lines. Good afternoon to Margaret in Ottawa. Hello, Margaret, are you there?
Oh, yes, I am.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, I haven't had asthma for about 7 years, and I just found this weekend it came back, and I'm kind of panicky because I can't breathe and I keep coughing, and there's no, like, I don't know where to go.
So you don't have any inhalers with you or puffers or anything?
Well, I thought I was over it.
Well, asthma is a chronic condition, so there are triggers for it. And sometimes when we're not exposed to things that cause our asthma in the first place, we just don't experience it for a while. With the early spring, we may have increased pollen counts and in the air, and it might have triggered your asthma because it's just it's exceeded what your body is willing to tolerate. And so you tended to get your asthma attack as one of the possibilities. So what you really should be doing is seeing your physician to get a prescription for the inhalers to try and control the asthma, but also to have your lungs listened to make sure there's nothing else that's contributing to this condition.
But, I think I might have pneumonia.
Well, pneumonia is a different diagnosis. Pneumonia.
No, but I've gotten like pneumonia every year all my life, and usually I was in the hospital every year.
Mm-hmm. Well. Well, Margaret,
is there anything I can do like till Tuesday?
Well, Margaret, if you think you have pneumonia, I wouldn't be waiting till Tuesday. I would be going to the emergency room to have your lungs checked to make sure that you don't have pneumonia.
Okay.
Because pneumonia as a diagnosis means you have usually a bacterial infection in your lung that will get worse. Have you had a fever? Are you having a fever?
Well, it just came back like yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Are you coughing up anything when you're coughing? Any specific color to it?
Well, yellow.
Okay, and any chills or sweats or anything along?
So,
you've had you said pneumonias in the past.
Oh yes,
Okay. And were these pneumonias that you were admitted to hospital for?
Yes.
So what I would say, Margaret, is just to be safe, given that, you know, it's difficult to know exactly what your state of health is, you know, over the air, is to actually go to the emergency room to have that evaluated. Because if you've had pneumonias before, if you're getting fever and chills and you're coughing things up, and there's a concern that there's pneumonia, it's not a good thing to wait. And the reason is that the infection gets worse very quickly. Bacteria will double every 20 minutes. And so pneumonias, especially bacterial pneumonias, can get worse very, very quickly and really compromise your ability to breathe. So especially if you've had asthma before, if you do have an infection, viral infections can also cause your asthma to come back. But nevertheless, given the history of what you've told me, I think it's probably a good idea for you to go to the emergency room in order to be sure
I'm
that
you don't have
that. I'm
afraid of sitting there for about 8 hours.
Well, if you tell them, I mean, first of all, sitting there for 8 hours is no different than sitting at home for 8 hours and then getting worse.
No, but at home I lie down.
Well, right, but then you get worse. And then you're off to the emergency room and having to wait even more. So, and the last thing you want to have is to have a situation where your pneumonia gets so severe that you are unable to get over to the emergency room and that you end up going by ambulance. So it's a matter of preventing things as opposed to waiting for things to get worse.
Okay, then.
So, you know, you can certainly go down there and say, you know, look, I've had a history of pneumonias in the past. I haven't had asthma in a long time. I'm having a difficult time time breathing. I'm short of breath and I need some help. It's unlikely that they're going to have you wait 8 hours if you're having difficulty breathing. They'll also be taking and checking oxygen levels in your blood. They'll listen to your lungs in triage as well just to get an idea of what's happening. So 8 hours is probably not going to happen if you have and if they find suspicion of an infection that's going on.
Okay, then.
So don't wait till Tuesday, Margaret.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. And that's our last caller, and that's pretty much all we have for our show this week. There were some issues I wanted to review that will probably come up next week. There was a survey in the United States published in the magazine Health Affairs that researched 2,000 physicians in the U.S. regarding their honesty with patients and how a lot of them are not describing serious medical errors to patients. Two-fifths don't think they need to share their financial relationships that they have with drug companies. There's a fear of lawsuits, so they tell them something more rosy than it actually is. So we'll get into that potentially next week. And also some stories on preventing cancer and some research into that with regards to what we can do without medications to reduce our risk of various cancers. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You have been listening to Sunday House Call. My thanks to Sebastian Tremblay for producing Sunday House Call. And we'll be back with another edition next week. Everyone, have a great week.